Welcome to this episode of the Blended Beat Coffee Grab podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Paula Barnard-Ashton, and each week we host a guest who will share their experiences, latest research, and innovations in blended learning. In this episode, we explore the importance of course design for intentionally crafted blended learning and opportunities to bring authentic assessment into our curricula. So we decided to again call on Professor Diane Grayson, Senior Director of Academic Affairs at WITS, to lend us her expertise on this topic. Welcome back, Diane.
Thank you so much, Paula.
You spoke last time about intentionality in how people go about crafting their blended learning. And so course design and our assessment procedures, I think, are quite important to consider. You know, our lecturers have better skills with the technology now, and we really need to shift them into intentional course design. Yeah. So what are your thoughts around intentional course design?
So I think the design part is the really critical word. It's really easy to imagine a course as a selection of topics joined together in a particular sequence, but that is not how you design a course. That's not actually design at all. So if you think about design, and design is one of the big buzzwords, of course, in the world today, and it's part of being creative and it's part of being innovative, you design whatever it is you want to design for a purpose. So when you're designing a course, you have to say, what is the purpose? Why am I designing this course? And you have to say, who is it for? So the two starting points in course design are my students, who are they? What are their characteristics? And why should I want them and why should they want to take this course? In what way will their lives be enriched? In what way will they be transformed by taking my course? And then on the other side, in what way will this course contribute to students who become graduates, who become contributing members of society? And how does my course link to other courses in a program that will lead to graduates with particular attributes? So the two starting points then are, what is the purpose of the course and who are the students for whom the course is being developed?
Absolutely. And I think that how the different parts of a program fit together, it also needs to be in a way that gels, in a way where the students are not going into one course and are then completely lost when another course program has a very, very different design. You know, I'm thinking of a very didactic lecture-based course, and then they change to a different course code for the next semester, and the design is pretty much online with a bit of in-person contact. So do our academics talk to each other when it comes to course design within a program, especially in a professional qualification where there are so many working parts?
Yeah, so I think probably our lecturers don't talk to each other as much as maybe would be helpful. So one of the areas that we're going to be working on more at WITS is program development. So course design is important, but program design is really important so that there is a flow, there is some kind of continuity, there is some kind of horizontal articulation among the courses that the students might be taking simultaneously, and some kind of vertical articulation so that one course does flow into the next course, not necessarily in terms of the pedagogical approach, but at least in terms of the learning outcomes. And that's another aspect of course design. You know, you should be able to say at the beginning of designing your course, what is it that my students need to be able to know to do? What are the things that I want to measure that they have achieved having done my course? And I think that's where a lot of courses perhaps don't succeed very well in what might be a tacit objective. So I've done a lot of work with lecturers over the years, particularly in the STEM fields, and asked them, what is it that you really want the students to get out of taking your course? And it's interesting that very rarely do they list the particular topics, the content knowledge, although that's important, of course. But more important is, what are the ways of thinking that the students have developed? What are the skills that they have developed? What are the values? What are the dispositions that they have developed? So if those are the things that are really important, in addition, obviously, to some content knowledge, but certainly not to the exclusion, these other things, then those should be designed in from the beginning. And then if the lecturers would talk to each other more, then it would be possible to build on the skills and the ways of thinking from one course to another and then up through the levels in a program, so that at the end, students have achieved certain exit level outcomes from a program that are valuable for them when they go out into the world as graduates.
Absolutely. And I think it brings about a different way of thinking when you're thinking about teaching a topic versus developing a young human who yes. is going into society to contribute in meaningful ways, and especially into the field, because I think that is our goal at the end of the day. And I think intentional course design also brings about aspects of how we reshape our assessment procedures. Yeah. And WITS has worked very hard, and you've worked very hard, at the new Senate standing orders for assessment of student learning. How do you think this has shifted over time? What was the impetus for new standing orders and new procedure documents? And how does blended learning and course design impact authentic assessment opportunities?
Right. Okay, that's a whole lot of questions.
That was a bit of a mouthful, but I think it's combined.
So if you go back to 2019, when we were working on developing our 5-year plan for learning and teaching, one of the 7 focus areas that we identified then was the need to diversify our assessment. So at that time, we were terribly focused on examinations. In fact, we had something like 1,300 invigilated written exams in each semester, which was incredibly stressful and incredibly demanding on everyone.
I was going to say, for the students as well.
For the students, for the staff, And there are a whole lot of questions that arise if you're going to focus so much on invigilated written exams, apart from the resources involved. Mm. In what way is an invigilated written exam an appropriate and valid measure of learning outcomes that are diverse? So in terms of what was the impetus for rewriting them, it began when we started thinking about what we needed to focus on in our learning and teaching plan. During COVID, of course, we couldn't do invigilated written exams, mm-hmm. and now suddenly we had to think of alternatives. Now, we know that there were some problems with things like Chegg, for example, opportunities for people to cheat mm-hmm. online. But there were also wonderful opportunities to be much more creative in really getting some much more valid measure of what students were learning. And so we rewrote the Senate standing orders. They were passed by Senate last year in March, and we're now in the phase of implementing them. And the idea is that monitoring and promoting and measuring student learning is a component of how you design your course. Mm. It's not something you add on afterwards. So if I'm a course designer, I say, okay, who are my students? What are their entering characteristics? What do I expect them to already know and be able to do? What are the learning outcomes I would like them to achieve by the end of my course? How will I get them there? By bringing them with me on a journey, by developing educational resources and learning activities. And then along the way, how will I monitor what they're learning? How will I promote their learning? And ultimately, how will I measure the extent to which they've achieved those learning outcomes? So that, again, it's all design. And if I have, let's say I have 5 learning outcomes in my course, it would be unusual that all 5 of those learning outcomes could be assessed in the same way at the same time. So for example, I'm a physicist. One of the things I might want my students to be able to do is to demonstrate that they have certain technical skills in the laboratory. So surely the best place to assess that is in the laboratory and not in an exam room in an invigilated
step by step.
Right. So again, coming back to being intentional, we need to be much more intentional about saying, if this is the learning outcome, what is the most valid and effective way of monitoring and ultimately measuring the extent to which students are achieving that learning outcome?
And I think it's also about allowing the student the opportunity to perform at their best.
Yes.
I think one of the things that these high-stakes exams tend to do is that they place the students under so much pressure that it's not necessarily a valid measure of their performance. Whereas on a lot more longitudinal opportunity where the students have the opportunity for feedback before they have to submit a final version of a document or an assignment or a portfolio, you're allowing the students the opportunity to perform optimally rather than not giving them the chance and everything depends on this one measure, which I think is why the mark shift has become one of the strategies towards that. But I think it's also about educating the educator on how we can assess differently.
Right. And it also shifts the focus from the marks to the learning.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think we're very mark-based. And I think that's an a societal parameter that is almost imposed from the outside. But demonstration of ability is a different element.
That's right. And so, you know, in these days of ChatGPT and artificial intelligence and all kind of other tools, we need to be very careful about what is it that we really want our students to know and be able to do. Because clearly we don't want them to just do what the computer can do. Mm. So in designing our assessments, we have to think differently and say, okay, given that there are AI tools and there are other technological tools and so on out there, what is important for my students to know and be able to do? And then how do I design that form of assessment? So one of the things we've introduced in our Senate standing orders is the term cumulative assessment, which allows students to work on a bigger task over a period of time, and the time might be the entire semester, for example, and to show that they are able to achieve learning along the way, and then to monitor their progress in the learning over time. And then there could be a particular activity at the end, maybe, where they have to then reflect and draw on what they've learned and done over that period of time.
And I think that also allows the opportunity for some collaborative aspects. They can, you know, brainstorm an innovation that solves a real-world problem as a group, and they might have individual components that they contribute towards, and they might have then collective. And I think the exciting thing is that it doesn't have to be bound within profession. I mean, I'm seeing certainly at a postgraduate level, but I think we could bring it down, is collaborative projects between students from different professions. So, you know, bringing the art students to the engineering students, to architecture, into the health sciences, and how do we build our hospitals better? Where it has elements of design, it has elements of engineering, business flow. There are so many opportunities to think differently about what our students do as projects that can actually have meaningful impact at the end of the day and solve real world problems.
Absolutely. And so you referred earlier to authentic learning. And what you're talking about is very much within the frame of authentic learning. So learning that relates to the real world. But authentic learning can also relate to the student's own experience. It doesn't necessarily have to be the world out there. And people have been saying, a lot of lecturers, teachers have been saying, you know, with all of this AI out there, how do we ensure that what students produce is their own work? Well, that's one of the ways, is to give authentic learning tasks and contextualize tasks that will help to ensure that the students want to learn instead of just wanting to get marks.
Absolutely.
And also that what they produce is, in fact, their own work.
I think we're at an exciting time. Mm. This flux of artificial intelligence that can create pictures for you, can create... I think there's opportunities there, but I don't think it's a barrier because we're not going to not have it in the future. So equipping our students how to use it, but still use their own knowledge, still learn, and still come at the end with their own products, their own evidence of their learning that they've attained along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things that, we've been missing a bit is trying to help students experience the joy of learning. Mm. The focus on marks has, I think, been a system flaw. So I'm very interested in systems thinking. And Danella Meadows is one of the... she wrote one of the seminal books called Thinking in Systems, and she talks about system flaws. And she said, if you focus on the wrong output, then that's what the whole system will gear itself towards. So if we focus on marks, of course that's what the students will focus on. And that's why I keep saying we have a duty to our students to help them experience the joy of learning. And part of how we do that is we set up our course design so that learning is encouraged and rewarding.
And you get to know exactly what the student knows anyway because they're actively participating in their learning journey.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think we've had some very interesting insights today. So thank you, Professor Grayson, for joining us. It's really been a pleasure having you back a second time. And we look forward to the third.
Thank you. Thank you, Paula.
And that was Professor Diane Grayson joining us again to discuss course design and authentic assessment in blended learning. We hope you've enjoyed listening to this episode and look forward to having more conversations with you next week.